involves you and your growing expertise. The more you do, the better you get at it. Soon, in conversations and your research, you'll start recognizing important clues that others might miss and pursue them. Interestingly, prospecting's greatest benefit, that it involves you, is also its Achilles heel. Your prospecting efforts will always be limited because there are limits to the amount of time and energy you're able and willing to give to them. Nevertheless, prospecting can put you on the path to prosperity, especially when you're prospecting within your well-placed leads network. It is the work that must be done if you are to reach your investment goals.
Market for sellers.
One of the important lessons I've learned in business is that most big businesses happen as a result of big lead generation. That means that successful business persons leave no method out unless they have to. They both prospect and market for leads. There are limits to your reach with prospecting that don't exist with marketing. Prospecting is something you do. Marketing is something you unleash. Once you've set it loose, it works without your having to be there to drive and power it. When you put up a sign on the side of a busy thoroughfare or tack a flyer to a pole, it does lead generating 24 hours a day, relaying your message to everyone who drives past. Prospecting stops when you do, but marketing lives on and on. A great example of the awesome power marketing can unleash is Homevestors of America Incorporated, a real estate investing franchise company. Ken D'Angelo was a real estate investor in Dallas, Texas, who specialized in fixing and flipping properties. He had a well-proven strategy, and in 1995, he actually, amazingly, flipped over 170 properties. That was when he knew that he was on to something significant and that it was time to take his model nationwide. The next year, D'Angelo parlayed his unique, simple, and highly effective real estate investment marketing program, bright yellow billboards that read, "We buy ugly homes" and "Ugly's okay," into a top 100 franchise business. His great little investing business became a great big investing business because of great marketing that really worked. What D'Angelo understood was that to find big financial success through investing in real estate, he would have to have a big lead generation program. Many new and even experienced investors miss this point. For some reason, they overlook marketing as a way to find real estate investment opportunities. Millionaires don't overlook it, and neither should you. In the world of real estate investing, marketing is all about attracting motivated sellers. It's a game of problems and solutions, like the "We Buy Ugly Homes" billboards. You want your marketing to announce to the world that you're an investor and are prepared to solve someone's problem. People have situations that sometimes translate into a need to sell their property and sell it quickly. Maybe the property was inherited and needs more repairs than the owner wants to deal with. Maybe the owner's job or family situation has changed and he needs to move quickly to a larger or smaller home. The owner's problem could arise from a positive circumstance, such as a new job opportunity in another town, or a negative circumstance, such as a company going out of business that has left her short on cash. Regardless of the circumstances, you must realize that you are not the cause of those situations. You are not the problem. You do, however, represent a possible solution if the seller is willing and able to meet your terms. Millionaire real estate investor Barbara Matson shared a story that illustrates this point. A gentleman she had never met came to her one day and asked her to take over 6 properties he owned that were on the verge of foreclosure. He had approached other real estate professionals, but they had passed on the opportunity. He wanted to keep his credit and was at the end of his choices. Barbara, unlike the others, was thinking like an investor and saw an opportunity for a win-win deal. She agreed to take over the properties and assume responsibility for their debt and payments by using a simple quitclaim deed. 6 weeks later, Barbara sold the properties for a net profit of $85,000, and although the seller only wanted to avoid foreclosure and asked for no money, Barbara gave him $15,000 in addition to saving his credit. Here was an individual with nowhere else to turn, who was helped by a real estate investor who cared enough to help, and who understood how to solve people's real estate problems. He won, she won, everyone won. Contrary to what some people think, this type of circumstance is not a predator and prey situation. I don't believe in or advocate for dishonesty or deception of any kind to anyone. You want to help, but you're an investor, and by definition, your goal is to remove risk from the transaction. You have to get an appropriate discount or terms on the property, or you can't do the deal. I even encourage you to let the seller know you're an investor and do not plan to live in the property. It's an investment, and although you'd love to help out, it must meet your strict criteria and terms. The rest is up to the seller. You have plenty to offer in this type of situation. You're a willing and reliable buyer who is prepared to act quickly and solve the problem. The solution you offer may not be exactly what the seller wants, but it may be the best option he or she has. The rule of thumb for marketing is that you should always send your message about being a solution to other people's property problems. There are many ways to get the word out. We talked to investors who did massive targeted mailings to subdivisions and neighborhoods. Others advertised in newspapers and real estate journals. Some distributed flyers, put up signs and billboards, or handed out their real estate investor business cards everywhere they went. A few obtained courthouse or publicly available lists of out-of-town property owners, local landlords, and even, in one case, minority owners in companies that held real estate. However, no matter which approach was used, these groups were all sent carefully tailored messages designed to announce a solution to their potential problems and attract motivated sellers. For example, out-of-town homeowners were sent messages that highlighted the problems of managing a property long distance, such as screening renters, managing maintenance contractors, and dealing with routine upkeep. All those things can present challenges to out-of-town owners. If your marketing represents you as someone who can solve this problem, maybe 2 or 3 out of every 100 people you mail to will inquire about your terms. That's when the opportunity to make a deal shows up. Remember to keep the message straightforward and simple. You buy properties, pay cash, and can close quickly. These are the 3 things someone with a property problem hopes to find: a quick cash solution to his or her troubles. By the way, when investors advertise that they pay cash, they aren't talking about a suitcase of money. They mean that they have set up lines of credit and quick private financing so that in a matter of days or even hours, they can have a cashier's check ready for closing. That's what they mean when they say they will pay cash for properties. It's about how quickly you can supply good-as-cash funds to pay for a property.
Question number 4. Which properties are the real opportunities?
Your lead generation activities are working, and you have investment opportunity leads. Now what? The number one cause of disillusionment and lost momentum is chasing too many leads that look like opportunities but aren't. Although there is no foolproof way to avoid wasting some time with these suspects, there is a way to avoid wasting a lot of time. It's called qualifying your leads. All this means is that you always must ask a few qualifying questions of the seller or the referrer to make sure the property falls within your criteria for what you're willing to consider. In other words, they qualify as prospects. The way to convert suspects to prospects is to write down the broad criteria that are most important to you and then make sure the property meets them. Properties that do, true prospects, are worth inspecting in greater detail. You still will end up talking to a lot of sellers and seeing a fair amount of property in this qualification process. Some aspect of your criteria may demand that you get personally involved to get the details you need to make a sound investment decision. There also will be times when individuals in the support circle of your work network can step in on your behalf and help you qualify properties. Your real estate agent or contractor may be happy to take a look at a property for you and give you his or her opinion. These people are in your support circle because they're good at what they do and because you trust their professional judgment. If the suspect turns out to be a true prospect, one way you can reward those people is by involving them professionally in the deal. The presiding wisdom when you're asking the question, which properties are the real opportunities, is to bear in mind your strict criteria and never violate them. Great criteria act like a safety valve, and to protect both your time and your money. The truth is that building great lead generation criteria requires focus over time. If you're looking at single-family homes in a certain part of town, you can get a rough idea of what they sell for and rent for by looking at the current area listings. However, the more suspects you investigate, the better your sense will be of which ones represent true prospects. You'll start to understand which aspects of your criteria count the most toward market values and rental rates. You need to understand why a certain property sells for the market average, while another sells for $15,000 more, or why a certain property rents for the average rent, while one down the street rents for $150 more. Each time you look, you get a snapshot of how your criteria perform in specific circumstances. Various factors affect value differently in your targeted areas, but your focus over time will give you insight into this process. Millionaire real estate investors are always refining their criteria. They want the tremendous advantages that come with truly understanding their market.
Live the five laws of lead generation.
They say that beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and that is certainly true in the game of real estate investing. Millionaire real estate investors approach lead generation with a posture and perspective that allows them to recognize legitimate opportunities and disregard properties that might be trouble. It's a posture and perspective of the watchful investor, and it's built on the five laws of lead generation.
Law number one, never compromise. You're only looking for properties that meet your criteria and motivated sellers who will meet your terms.
This law is about standards and the patience and persistence it takes to fulfill them. Finding real estate investment opportunities that meet the tough, unyielding standards of a successful investor takes time, patience, and persistence, especially in the beginning. It can take weeks, months, or even longer to find a deal that is right for you. After looking at property after property, many new investors start compromising their criteria or their terms. For an investor, the answer to the question, is this a great deal, is black and white, a yes or no answer. It is a great deal or it is not. For investors, there is no might be. That is the exclusive territory of speculators. Properties either meet your strict criteria or they do not. Sellers are either motivated to accept your strict terms or they are not. The strong desire to do a deal, to get in the game, can lead to trouble. Never compromise.
Law number two. Be a shopper, not a buyer. It's better to miss a good one than buy a bad one.
Investors live for the hunt, the thrill of the chase. They are as attached to the process of searching for investment opportunities as they are to the act of buying them. They are shoppers, not buyers. In our interviews with millionaire real estate investors, the way they talked about their investments made this very clear. They were as proud of the effort they made in finding a deal and making it happen as they were of the profit they made. These investors understand that being a shopper instead of a buyer yields two significant advantages. First, they get to enjoy the part of investing they do the most, the ongoing quest for great opportunities. Investing is cyclic. There are times of plenty and times of scarcity, but because they are shoppers, abundance never leads to recklessness, and scarcity never leads to impatience. That leads to the second great advantage of this posture. It protects them. These investors never feel the urge to compromise their standards. They treat every potential deal with a healthy dose of skepticism. They see properties first as suspects, and only after a thorough examination will they consider them prospects. It's the qualification process. The property must meet their criteria, and the seller must meet their terms. Nothing else will do. They believe it's as great a day when they say no as when they say yes. While a buyer never leaves the store empty-handed, a shopper will do so happily. Shoppers understand that it is far better to lose a good one than buy a bad one. Most people think buying is investing, but they're wrong. Buying doesn't make you an investor, any more than buying groceries makes you a chef. Making decisions on the basis of sound investment criteria and terms makes you an investor. Buying isn't the decisive factor. It's just the result of a decision. If you're looking at property, talking to sellers, and saying no, you're investing. Great investors celebrate the decision-making process first and the outcome second. They know that their success is based not on doing deals, but rather on doing great deals. They love to shop and decide, not look and buy. In the end, the great deals go to the great decision-makers. They go to the shoppers.
Law number 3. Timing matters. Be the first or last person to make an offer.
An essential component of finding a seller who will meet your terms is timing. If at all possible, you want to try to represent the seller's first or last chance to sell. You're looking for the advantage of an uncompetitive environment. When other investors are vying for the same property, the very nature of competitive offers can make it difficult to achieve your terms. The lead generation programs of many millionaire real estate investors are designed to put them in the best possible position to be a seller's first chance to sell. They market and prospect for sellers who do not yet know they are sellers. They are competition averse and love to ask the question, "Have you ever considered selling that property?" They also have a hair trigger when it comes to properties that meet their criteria. They don't hesitate to take action and make the right offer. While time will tell if the seller will accept their terms, they would rather have the offer fall through than risk competitive offers that almost certainly will drive up the price. There is no risk in this decisive action. The property meets their criteria, and they only make offers that meet their terms. The very nature of real estate offers is that what the investors are buying is an option to buy the property. If during the property inspection the realities of the property no longer meet their expectations, they can walk away. If you've participated in an auction, you've seen how the law of being last plays out. Serious investors rarely bid before the auctioneer counts down with going once, going twice. They understand that most of their competition has been weeded out. And if their price terms can still be met, they make their offer. Also, they rarely stay in the bidding process for long. Great investors pick their moments, and when they can, they choose to be first or last.
Law number 4. It's a numbers game. The quality is in the quantity.
Great lead generation in any business is about overkill over time. The more properties you look at and the more sellers you interview, the greater the odds are that you'll find something great. Millionaire real estate investors understand this, and they cast a wide net for opportunity. The quality is in the quantity. We surveyed our investors to get a sense of the number of opportunities they investigated to find and make a deal. Statistically, it broke down like this. For every 30 properties they found that met their basic criteria and were suspects, the ones worth investigating, about 10 were prospects, ones that warranted serious investigation. Of those 10, only about 3 were worth making an offer on. And because their terms were as strict as their criteria, only one of those offers turned into a done deal. Call it the 30 to 10 to 3 to 1 lead generation ratio for experienced investors. Beginning investors probably will have to look at 3 to 5 times as many properties, say 90 to 150, to find legitimate prospects. Why so many? Millionaire investor George Midoff says that it's about developing the knowledge you need to make good decisions. Your criteria are developed and refined through the process of looking at properties, lots of them, that meet your basic standards. Over time, your sense of what constitutes a great opportunity becomes more precise, and the numbers start to turn in your favor. With clear criteria, your marketing and prospecting will yield increasingly qualified leads. Whatever your personal lead generation ratio is, one thing is certain. Lead generation for real estate investments is a numbers game. If you cast a wide net, your chances of netting a winner will improve.
Law number 5. Be organized and systematic. Protect your time and your money.
The final law of lead generation is about treating it like a business. It's about protecting your time and money by being systematic and organized. When you're looking at real estate investment opportunities or prospecting for them, what's at risk is your time. Considering all the things you could do instead, your time is a precious commodity. Moreover, when you're marketing for opportunities, something even more tangible is at risk. The money you spend on promotions and advertising, that's precious too. The key difference between the top performers and the rest lies in their approaches to lead generation. The best sales professionals are systematic. They dedicate a set amount of time each week to lead generation and block their time so that nothing prevents them from pursuing this key business activity. For real estate investing, I've discovered that it takes the same kind of focus. You have to set aside dedicated time systematically each week to prospect for leads, implement your marketing plan, and track the results. Being organized is about tracking and sourcing leads. When people call you with an opportunity, ask them how they heard about you. When you get the answer, record it. Whether it's the result of your local market or your personal talents, some of your prospecting and marketing efforts will yield better results than others. The people who send you opportunities most often should get a disproportionate amount of your attention. Those are the first people you contact and the ones you touch regularly. Similarly, the marketing efforts that generate the most legitimate leads should get a disproportionate amount of your time and money. Unless you're tracking your efforts and recording the results, you may never know how best to spend your time and money to find great investment opportunities. If you make the commitment to being very systematic in your lead generation, with just a little organization, the connections will become clear and exciting. You begin to see not just the time and money you save, but also the gains. That's when your efforts take on a different aura. That's when you realize you're not just prospecting, marketing, and tracking the results. You're actually engaged in a fundamental wealth-building activity that is changing your life.
The flow of your lead generation model.
When you take a step back and look at all the pieces, you can see the natural flow of how lead generation works. It's a game of constantly engaging your work network and leads network with only one goal in mind, finding a property that meets your criteria. Once you find one, you will be ready to follow the acquisition model to see if you can acquire it on your terms.
The acquisition model of the millionaire real estate investor.
Up to this point, you've invested your time. Now it's time to invest your money. You're at the real estate investor's moment of truth, the place where dreams come true or not, the place where financial wealth is made or lost. It's time to make money. How do millionaires make money? It's simple. They make their money going in. By following the acquisition model and buying right, they virtually guarantee the success of their investments. That's what you want to do. You want to learn to follow the acquisition model of the millionaire real estate investor. If you can purchase property with enough profit built in, you will have ensured at the time you buy, your investments will make you money. This is important because once you begin to make real estate acquisitions, your performance will be recorded permanently and forever. No replays or do-overs. If you stick to the acquisition model, you won't need any. Earlier in this book, we used the phrase, persistent effort, patient money. This moment of acquisition is where we were pointing you. If you've been persistent in your efforts, you can be more confident investing your money. Your patience will have paid off. Many would-be investors do not get this. They are so eager to be real estate investors, they just hop in and buy something. They attempt acquisitions before they know enough to buy wisely or safely. They put their money in play too soon and put themselves at risk. By sharing the well-earned wisdom and real-life experiences of our millionaire real estate investors, we have been both preparing your mind and informing your actions to get your investment plans launched. Now you understand the path of money. You've budgeted so that you have money to invest. And you've set up your personal balance sheet so you can track your progress. You know how real estate investing can increase your net worth through equity buildup and cash flow growth. You've begun to build your work network so that you'll have the team you need to mentor you, support you, and service your investments. You've developed your criteria and your lead generating for it. Now you have leads, prospective opportunities to invest in, and you'll have to start making decisions. The decisions you make and the actions you take in these critical moments can have a profound impact on your financial wealth building. Our fifth model, the acquisition model, gives you the framework and readiness to analyze these investment opportunities and make great deals.
Cash or cash flow and equity.
In real estate investing, there are only two fundamental acquisition strategies: buy for cash and buy for cash flow and equity buildup. There are many specializations and variations within each of these basic strategies, and they often are referred to by various names, such as optioning, assuming, rehabbing, long-term investing, quick-turn investing, wholesaling, wrapping, lease optioning, or fixing and flipping. However, all those names just complicate the picture. No matter what you call them, these strategies boil down to one simple fact. Investors invest for cash, or invest for cash flow and equity. One is a cash-building strategy, and the other is a wealth-building one. All you need to do is decide which of these two strategies you want or need to use, and then follow the model for it. Experienced millionaire real estate investors often make their investment decision-making seem easy. They can look at a property, do some quick calculations on the back of an envelope or in their heads, then they can tell you whether it could be a good deal or not, along with how they do it. This is somewhat frustrating to observe because you can't really follow their thought process and the way they arrive at their answers. At times it can look like they don't have a process at all. What we came to understand was that millionaires do have a method of analysis they follow without fail. It's based on their experience, and they apply it intuitively. It's like a rule of thumb, except with lots of thumbs all working together. You could call it a rule of hand that sometimes seems like sleight of hand, a trick casual observers can't follow. But it's there. And when you put it on paper, you begin to see the detailed, step-by-step process they follow. It tells them what to do and allows them to make good decisions quickly and efficiently. The fundamental process they follow is the acquisition model of the millionaire real estate investor.
Cash.
For some investors, because of their goals or current circumstances, cash is king. If you want cash, you have four basic options for accumulating it. The first is find and refer. The second is control and assign. The third is buy and sell. And the last, buy, improve, and sell. If you are looking for cash and don't want to invest any money or even write a contract, you can accomplish that through find and refer. You can become a scout. As a scout, you seek out good investment opportunities and then bring them to investors who are ready and willing to acquire these properties. In many cases, they'll be willing to pay you a finder's fee if the opportunities are good and they would not have located them otherwise. This is probably the fastest way to earn cash, and by far the option you can do the most of in terms of numbers. The drawback is that the money paid per transaction is the least among the four options. The second fastest option to earn cash is control and assign. This means you gain an option or an assignable contract on an investment property, and then find someone else to acquire it. Since you control the property, you have negotiation power. This method has a little better margin than find and refer, but the volume potential is a little less. The third option is buy and sell, in which you acquire the property, make no improvements, and put it back on the market at a higher price. Your profit margin begins to improve with this option. The issue now is that you will have to spend more time to do these deals, and the volume will be less. The payoff is the profit. The fourth option is buy, improve, and sell. This cash-building method can offer even better margins than buy and sell, but it takes considerably more time and money. Plus, there will likely be even fewer deals to do. The acquisition model, figure 86 on the bonus CD, illustrates that find and refer can provide you with lots of fast cash deals, but usually pays the least per deal. On the other hand, buy, improve, and sell can pay the most per deal, but usually requires considerably more of your investment money to do. There are rare cases where control and assign can pay off big, but those deals are extremely hard to find. The truth is that you always should be on the lookout for opportunities. And when a property matches up with one of the four cash-building methods, you should consider moving forward to make some cash from it. The primary purpose of the four cash-building strategies is to generate immediate cash, income which can be used as earned income or put back into play along the path of money. Many of the investors we talked with at one time or another used all these methods to launch their real estate investing careers. When they did them right, which we will warn you is not as easy as it's often made out to be, they were able to build up some cash savings, which they could use as down payments on income properties. They were taking cash and reinvesting it for cash flow and equity, creating long-term financial wealth building.
Cash flow and equity.
If you want cash flow and equity, you have three options for building and attaining them. The lease option, the buy and hold, or the buy, improve, and hold. In the game of cash flow and equity, an option that requires little or no money is the lease option. By the way, you can lease option in, lease option out, or do both. Lease option in is when you negotiate to lease a property from the seller, usually for 2 to 5 years, with the option to buy at the end of the period at a pre-negotiated price. You may or may not have to put money down. As part of your lease option contract agreement, you've secured the right to lease this property to a lease-to-own buyer. That's exactly what you need to do, except that you lease the property to a tenant for more than the original lease. The difference between the rent you collect and the lease payment you make is your cash flow. This is essentially a lease option in wrapped inside your lease option. The key is to have a renter lined up before you agree to lease option the property. Lease option out is when you rent a property you own to a tenant, possibly someone who needs a few years to clean up his or her credit, with an option to buy at the end of the lease period. You may gain increased cash flow during the lease period and, depending on the pre-negotiated price, gain equity. As you can see, if you use the lease option in and at the same time enter into a lease option out with your renter, you're doing both at once. The second way to create cash flow and equity is to buy and hold. In this case, you simply buy the property and lease it out. In some cases, you may purchase a property that already has tenants who have signed lease agreements. This can be less complicated than a lease option in, but you're now actually the owner of the property, and that brings both risk and reward. Also, you no longer are bound to a predetermined sales price and may choose to sell the property at any time, or hold it for cash flow and equity buildup as long as you like. The last and possibly best way to build cash flow and equity is to buy, improve, and hold. This looks just like the buy and hold choice, but because improvements must or can be made, there is an opportunity for an additional upside in terms of higher rents and better equity buildup. Some improvements will be physical, in the sense that you repair the property or add features or amenities. You can also improve it through zoning or use. For instance, converting residential zoning to commercial or apartments to condos. Because some of your physical improvements may be classified as capital improvements by the IRS, they may effectively reduce the taxes you pay on the cash flow you earn from the property. In the end, the three cash flow and equity building strategies all work to generate unearned income and increase net worth. Many of the millionaire investors we talked with were very clear about a few things regarding cash, cash flow, and equity buildup. They were very clear that the opportunity in real estate to generate cash is great, but it's also a job. The moment you stop buying and selling, your income goes away. They also believed that building equity and generating cash flow were the ways to create wealth. They also were very clear that each strategy has a formula that cannot be violated. They knew that the dollars are in the details and the profits are in the pennies. They understood that if they didn't manage the process tightly, the big money might escape them. They were right on all counts. When you take a step back and look at all the ways you can earn cash or build cash flow and equity, the two fundamental ways that stand out above all the others are the buy and sell and the buy and hold options, especially when they include improvements. They are foundational strategies that, once learned, open the doors to understanding all the other strategies. Let's take a closer look at each one.
Terms for buy and sell.
In the buy and sell strategy, you're looking for one thing, cash. The goal is to ensure a net profit payoff within weeks, or at most months, by buying a property and then turning around and selling it. Although this method usually has the biggest payoffs, it comes with one big challenge. You must know your numbers, lots of them. And if you're going to use the buy, improve, and sell, there are even more numbers you need to know and understand. Your numbers have to be accurate going in. You're making a series of predictions, all of which have to turn out pretty much as forecast for the deal to be a success. You better be right, or you better have built in a serious margin for error. A terms worksheet for the buy and sell can be found on the bonus CD, and will allow you to do this in as systematic a way as possible. It is your checklist for making a good investment. Each transaction is unique, and you will have to deal with its quirks on a very short-term basis. With buy and sell, you need the ability to assess the situation as it unfolds and respond quickly to the contingencies. On the worksheet, you'll notice there are many acronyms with buy and sell. ARV, FARV, COP, COR, CC, and COS. Each one represents a number you will need to estimate with great accuracy, and they all will factor into your actual purchase offer. These are the details that, when done right, yield the dollars you're after. There's also a primary purchase terms section that shows what you will offer for the property and what investment you will make. Then there are four sub-worksheets that constitute the operating terms section. Each sub-worksheet is used to determine a key number that will be carried up to the purchase terms and used to determine what will have to happen for this to be a buy-it-right deal. There are two very important safety margins or factors that must be determined as you use the buy-and-sell investment strategy. First, think quick sale. Consider the experiences of Rick Villani, founder of Austin-based Home Fixers, a national contracting company for the real estate investment industry. In any given market, Home Fixers consults with dozens of investors each month and sees firsthand the painful experience of investors who overestimate the selling price. Rick said that overestimating the market and asking too high a sales price can add weeks, even months, to your selling time. The price a property might sell for versus the price it will quickly sell for can be the difference in controlling your carrying costs, and most importantly, making an accurate initial calculation about expected profits. The expected profits establish the initial offer price on the house. So, when forecasting your selling price, don't just consider the after-repair value, or the ARV. Consider also the fast after-repair value, or FARV. Rick's formula for FARV is 2 weeks. What will the house sell for within the first 2 weeks on the market? The difference between ARV, what the house might sell for, and the FARV, or what the house will sell for within the first 2 weeks on the market, is the fast sell factor. The second safety factor is called your discount profit margin, and is the actual margin from which you will make your profit on the investment. This number is critical because it also has to give you breathing room, your margin for error, in case something unforeseen happens. This could include hidden repairs, unexpected bad weather, contractor delays, and any number of examples of Murphy's Law. What can go wrong will go wrong. Those with the most experience in this method of real estate investing feel that the discount or profit margin needs to be as high as 30% of your property price. As the price of the property increases, they believe this margin usually becomes a flat dollar amount, such as $30,000 or $40,000, since the 30% figure may not hold up for properties costing in excess of $150,000. In either case, they agree you must establish this margin going in. You have to be accurate and conservative in all your cost estimates, assessment of eventual market value, and estimate of the price point that would sell the property quickly. The sub-worksheets are fairly self-explanatory. As much as anything, they are meant to be reminders so that you never omit these important costs in your thinking. For example, the cost of purchase sub-worksheet reminds you to account for the costs of potentially rewarding the scout who brought you the deal, paying your inspector to walk through the property with you, and any other closing costs you might incur as the buyer. Using the cost of repair sub-worksheet instantly transforms your buy and sell terms worksheet into a buy, improve, and sell terms worksheet, which is an entirely different kind of transaction. The cost of repair sub-worksheet is also slightly different in that it is a summary worksheet as well. The five main repair categories, cosmetic minor, cosmetic major, structural, fixtures, appliances, and landscaping, have detailed sub-worksheets of their own. You'll find them in the appendix on the bonus CD. For example, for cosmetic minor repairs, you might include everything from carpets and paint to adding new hardware to the cabinets and crown molding to the living room. Because there are so many things to consider, it pays to have a detailed checklist. It also pays to account for a contingency factor here. One of our favorite and most helpful investors, Bob Guest, was very fond of reminding us that every house has a surprise, and he was absolutely right. The cost of repairs analysis is where you account for that contingency factor as it relates to repairs. Your carrying costs are where you'll estimate the taxes, fees, utilities, debt service, and upkeep you'll have to pay from the time you buy the property to the time you sell it. Remember that these are all time-based estimates. You'll need your contractor to tell you how quickly the expected repairs can be completed. Then pad that time frame to account for bad weather, worker unavailability, and any other potential delays. This is your repair time. Next, you'll have to account for the time it will take to show, sell, and close on the property. Many of the good investors we talked with conservatively budgeted for 3 to 4 months of carrying costs for homes with only minor repairs. Repairing and selling can take much longer than you might expect. Many of the homes targeted by the buy and sell investors are often at the high-low end or lower middle market. This means you're not always selling to buyers with lots of cash for closing and perfect credit. The great offer you accept may fall through because of financing or credit issues. This could mean starting over, and that means time. The costs of sale analysis is appropriately last. This is where you must account for any real estate agent commissions if you enlist the help of an agent to market and sell the property. You'll probably want to include a home warranty for a few $100s, since it can both give you and your buyer security against the unknown. Other costs of sale include title insurance, origination fees, and the like, all the typical closing costs associated with traditional financing. A real estate agent, title officer, or mortgage loan officer can help you calculate these costs correctly. This can be a big gotcha for a buy and sell investor who doesn't prepare for the right type of buyer. Because you could be dealing in homes on the lower end of the market, you may be asked to pay the buyer's closing costs. Your buyer may have great credit and be willing to meet your asking price, but have no cash for closing costs. Account for that, and you'll be protected in the long run.
Buy, improve, and sell for maximum return.
Finally, when it comes to the buy, improve, and sell strategy, you should be aware that you have a window of opportunity to achieve a maximum return. Understanding this window makes you an expert in maximizing your returns when improving real estate investments. On the front end, you know that you will have to invest a certain amount of money and make a certain amount of improvements just to break even. As you begin to invest money in improvements, even with your discount or profit margin taken into account, you may reach a point where the costs of improvement have chewed away your margin. Selling before this point, while the property is underimproved and not yet ready for resale, will lower your profit margin or even cost you money. At a certain point, you realize that your improvements reach critical mass, the point of your minimum return or maximum loss, and subsequent improvements will earn you more than they cost. From this point on, as you make additional improvements, if they are the right improvements, you will increase the market value of the property. You are in the prime improvement zone. However, be aware that this increase in value has a practical limit. It's what the market will bear. From here on, any additional investment in improvements will not add much, if any, market value to the property. You have reached the point of your maximum return on investment. It is now time to avoid over-improving the property and put it on the resale market fast, cash in on your profit margin, and move on to the next investment. Knowing which improvements at what cost will bring the maximum return is the ultimate skill in this game. It's the game of getting the highest return from the least investment in improvements. To see a graph that depicts this concept, go to Figure 88 on the bonus CD. Investors with construction experience and those with do-it-yourself skills and a solid knowledge of repair work can do well with buy, improve, and sell. Not only do they enter the game with an informed idea of the costs and time needed to do common repairs, they are capable of doing many of those repairs themselves. This sweat equity allows them to exchange their time and labor for reduced expenses and larger profit margins. Most people, however, will need the advice of an experienced contractor and the help of a solid team of repair and remodeling professionals to optimize this strategy.
Terms for buy and hold.
We are now ready to consider the true financial wealth-building strategic option of the real estate investor, buy and hold. This is the long-term strategy that can bring you maximum equity and personal net worth. Ultimately, it's the strategy you will want to use and master. Buy and hold epitomizes what we learned in the financial model about the power of real estate investments to create equity buildup and cash flow growth. A buy-and-hold chart, Figure 89 on the bonus CD, highlights the primary financial considerations to bear in mind for your long-term acquisition strategy. You're buying properties for appreciation, cash flow, or preferably both. You can give primary emphasis to appreciation or cash flow, or both. What you want to avoid is any investment that falls into low or no cash flow and low or no appreciation. This is not the path of the millionaire real estate investor because the risks are way too high. Remember, a great real estate investment carries almost no risk. It is based on the underlying fundamentals of attaining price and rent appreciation. Buy it right going in, and those fundamentals will work relentlessly in your favor. Buy and hold is just as much a numbers game as buy and sell is. But you're letting the results happen over a longer, more predictable period of time. Doing it right at the beginning, making your money going in, is just as critical here. There's a process to follow to help make this happen using a pre-investment checklist. We call it the Buy and Hold Term Worksheet. You can refer to Figure 90 on the bonus CD. Just as with the Buy and Sell Term Worksheet, there is a purchase terms section and an operating terms section. The four subsections of the operating terms guide you in estimating and calculating the numbers that will be placed in the purchase terms section. This will determine what you can offer for the property and what you will accept. Once again, these terms are financial, and you must become a master of the financial terms that make a real estate investment work. For openers, you must have an accurate figure for the current market value of the property, plus some well-supported evidence that home price appreciation will continue for that price range in that area. Next, you must establish your discount or profit margin up front. This is your basic foundation for buy it right. The margin we recommend is at least 20%, more if you can get it. Just as with the buy and sell strategy, for investments over $150,000, you'll want to pick a dollar amount. $20,000 to $25,000 is the typical range, since this percentage will be hard to attain in middle and high-end properties. Purchasing the property with this margin gives you security, and often means that you'll achieve positive net cash flow from the very beginning. The vast majority of millionaire real estate investors believe that having positive cash flow is critical. Some are willing to do without discounts or even deal with short-term negative cash flow if they can get solid appreciation. It happens all the time, but requires a lot of knowledge and skill to successfully pull off. However, in the overwhelming majority of cases, millionaire investors go for both, and we recommend that you do the same thing. The second big decision of your purchase term is the down payment. In some cases, the lender on a mortgage for an investment property will require you, the investor, to put down 20%. They want to be sure that you have your money as well as theirs at risk. Because you won't be living in the property, they want extra assurance that you are equally committed to the investment. If you're going to be living in the home, even though you are doing it as part of your investment strategy, we call this buy and live, you may be able to purchase it with little or no money down. The same calculations for cost of purchase and cost of repair are done here that were done with the buy and sell option. They are straightforward, and you can use the same detailed repair estimate worksheet that is in the bonus CD we referred to earlier. What is unique to the buy and hold worksheet is the net operating income sub-worksheet. Again, these worksheets are from Figure 90 on the bonus CD. This is where you will come to know the numbers that make a residential income property work for you. You'll have to determine the current monthly rental rates in your local area for the type of property you're considering. That's your gross rental income. Many long-time investors use a 1% rule of thumb, where you'll get, as your monthly rent, an amount equal to 1% of the property's market value. If you must guess, we recommend a more conservative ratio of 0.8%. For example, instead of counting on a $100,000 home to rent for $1,000 a month, you conservatively use $800 for your rental estimation. No rule of thumb is good enough for estimating this critical number in your acquisition worksheet. You need to know what that particular property has rented for in the past, or what similar properties rent for in the neighborhood now. While you're doing your due diligence on the property, ask for copies of the lease and call the numbers on area rental signs. Remember to research the internet and MLS and newspapers for market rents. Your ballpark estimate using our 0.8% rule may have been fine for making an initial evaluation or even an offer, but the real rental value, which is determined through due diligence and market research, will be a deal-breaking factor in your ongoing negotiations. Having established your best projection for gross rental income, you must allow for vacancies, the times when the property is unoccupied and you are not receiving rental income. We have used 6 to 8%, or about 3 to 4 weeks annually, as a vacancy factor in our model. But you'll have to determine this locally and take into account current rental market conditions. When you subtract your vacancy factor from the gross rental income, you have your net rental income. From that, you will subtract all your expenses, your monthly operating costs, which will leave you your net operating income, or NOI. What you now have is a number that'll tell you what you'll be able to pay in debt service, the monthly principal and interest on your mortgage loan, plus what cash flow you will have left. This is a critical point in the buy and hold acquisition model. If the property does not produce cash flow with the numbers you have, you'll have to lower your offer appropriately or seek special financing. The right terms, the interest rate and length of payback on your loan, can often make a significant difference. The investors we talked to were extremely creative in their financing solutions. They understood how to take advantage of variable rate and adjustable rate conventional mortgages to get immediate cash flow on the deal. Often, they sought seller financing, which allowed them to set terms that were unique to each deal. All these strategies may require trade-offs, so be aware of this at all times. Shortcuts that get you cash flow often take away from your equity buildup. As a simple way to illustrate this, we created a chart to illustrate the dramatic difference in equity buildup using a 15-year conventional loan versus a 30-year loan, as shown on Figure 91 in the bonus CD. In general, shorter terms on your mortgage loans will lead to higher monthly loan payments that have a direct negative impact on your cash flow, but a major positive impact on your equity buildup. After 16 years, the 15-year loan is completely paid off, which means you'll experience a big jump in cash flow. In contrast, at year 16, the 30-year loan still has 75% of the principal debt remaining. Millionaire real estate investor Ron Garber adopted a strategy of acquiring a single property and then aggressively paying down the principal by using any income he and his wife had. Together, they acquired foreclosure properties in California and effectively turned 30-year mortgages into 12- and 24-month mortgages. Admittedly, the first few houses were the most difficult and required the strictest personal budgeting, but they stuck to the strategy because they, quote, couldn't stand having debt. They wanted their assets free and clear. Only when they had paid off one property fully would they acquire another and then apply the cash flow from all the paid-off properties to the new one. Each property that was paid off accelerated the process, and in a matter of years, the Garbers assembled an impressive portfolio of investment properties that generated big cash flow with almost no financial liabilities. While these debt-averse investors represent an extreme version of equity buildup, their aggressive strategy made them millionaire real estate investors and gave them financial freedom. As we discussed in the section on the financial model, if you don't need the cash flow today, why not reinvest it for tomorrow? Reinvestment can put you on the fast track to financial freedom. With your net operating income, your principal and interest sub-worksheets completed, you're now able to plug in the final pieces of your purchase terms at the top. This is where you're considering four things at once: the best purchase price, what kind of loan to use, how the seller might provide additional help with the financing, and fourth, whether you want to do this deal. If the terms worksheet shows you that the numbers will work with conventional 15 or 30-year financing, you'll be willing to make an offer. If the seller is unwilling to meet these terms, or if you need additional low-cost owner financing to make it work, and the seller is not willing to do that, you will not be able to accept the deal. With your options exhausted, you will, with no attachment to this property, move on in your criteria-based lead generation. If the seller agrees to what you have offered, based on your thorough analysis of the numbers and on the terms worksheet, you have a deal and will make the investment.
Acquisition worksheets, real-life examples.
To see how the acquisition worksheets can be used in your investment decision-making, let's look at two real-life examples. We will be dealing with the same property, but from two different points of view. In the first case, we'll be using the buy-and-sell worksheet, and in the second, the buy-and-hold worksheet. Our target property is a $125,000 single-family home. Whether we use buy-and-sell or buy-and-hold, this example will involve costs of purchase and costs of repairs. In case one, the buy-and-sell analysis, we'll be focusing on our fast after-repair value, the carrying costs, and the costs of sale. In case two, the buy-and-hold analysis, we'll be focusing on our net operating income and our principal and income, the debt service. In both cases, we'll be looking for and factoring in a discount or profit margin of 30% for the buy-and-sell and 20% for the buy-and-hold. Finally, we're going to assume we have about $28,000 to put toward either investment.
The buy-and-sell worksheet in action.
First, let's look at this property using the buy-and-sell terms worksheet found on the bonus CD as Figure 92. The purchase terms are described at the top of the worksheet, with sub-worksheets below to get the primary numbers. We've estimated the market value of the property to be $125,000. The cost of purchase, expenses incurred at closing, excluding the sales price, is $925, which includes the inspector's fee and the closing costs. The cost of repair sub-worksheet details the work you will need to have done for the house to sell for the maximum return on your investment. The house's interior needs new paint. new carpeting throughout, and a good cleaning, about $3,200. The roof needs to be repaired, which you manage to do for about $1,800. The kitchen is also a mess, so you install new composite countertops for $300, repaint the cabinets, and update the pulls and hinges. To top it off, you install a new oven and dishwasher for $700. The yard needs work, so you hire a local lawn company to mow and edge, trim the trees out front, and plant some perennials in the front beds for $200. So far, the repairs will cost you $6,450, but to be safe, you add 10%, $645, as a contingency factor. The total cost of repairs is $7,095. In the carrying costs sub-worksheet, we're allowing for 3 months' worth of these expenses. You have estimated that all the repair work can be done in a month, and that it will take a month to sell plus another month to close. Therefore, you are allowing for 3 months of taxes at $250 per month, or $750. Include the $350 cost of your insurance policy, and 3 months of utilities at $100 a month for a total of $300. Since you have $28,000 to invest, you'll need to borrow $30,000. Your private lending source is going to charge you 1% a month interest, which will be $900 for the 3 months. The total carrying costs will be $2,420. You can see that any additional carrying time will cost $800 a month, so getting it sold quickly is important. Finally, you'll look at the cost of sale sub-worksheet to be certain you have planned for these expenses. You allow $6,750 for a 6% agent commission on the planned $112,500 sale price, as well as $485 for a home warranty. Figure about 1%, $1,125, for title insurance and related fees, plus an allowance for buyer closing costs of $2,000. While you may be able to close the sale without incurring all these expenses, you need to allow for them. If it costs less to repair, carry, or sell the property, you make more. As you look closely at the buy and sell terms worksheet, you see that you'll be able to offer $58,000 for the property. If the seller accepts this, you have a deal. If not, you'll have to move on. There is little wiggle room in your calculations. While you have allowed for some contingencies, this is the